We are back on Get Up with a huge hour coming your way, including perhaps the beginning of a new era in college sports. Right off the top, we'll explain why all of it may never look the same again. Then, if one team is going to make the playoffs this year that didn't a season ago, is it this one? And who will the quarterback be? We'll answer both those questions. And then wait until you hear what Stephen A. thinks this star quarterback should do next. You will, and believe it or not, he may be right. We'll get up with you, starting right now. Let's get up and go, and we start with action from the Korea Baseball Organization, where Aaron Altair, former Met, is at the plate. Aaron Altair, former Met, is in the seats for the NC Dinos. You see, he had a big day, 2-for-3 with a home run and a run driven in as his team would beat the Samsung Lions by a score of 4-3, all the action on ESPN2. To the NFL, Frank Gore will be back for his 16th NFL season in 2020 after agreeing to a one-year deal with the Jets yesterday. The soon-to-be 37-year-old is the third leading rusher in NFL history. Rafael Nadal has told the Spanish media he thinks the 2020 tennis season should be scrapped entirely so the sport could resume normally in 2021. Wimbledon has already been canceled. The French Open has been postponed till late September, and there is still hope that they will play the U.S. Open as scheduled at the end of the summer. Speaking of hoping they'll play, no set plans have been made as to how or when the 2020 college football season will take place amidst the virus. Yesterday, Notre Dame Athletic Director Jack Swarbrick said he understands there will be competitive advantages if some schools are able to resume before others. Here's more of what he said.
I'm not concerned about a competitive advantage or disadvantage. I've accepted long ago in this pandemic that that's a natural consequence. There'll be great disparities, I think, that are inevitable in this. The NCAA will do what it can, I think, to regulate them. But you're still going to have circumstances where schools aren't open and others are, or states haven't reopened and some have. I think the bigger challenge for us is the consequence that that will have on competing in the fall. It's one thing to say that one team gets a competitive advantage. It's another to say, what are the circumstances under which you could play? I would be surprised if there's any conference that hasn't looked at a conference-only alternative. We are very comfortable that if it goes that way, that we'll be fine. We will be able to play a high-quality, full schedule, the same number of games as other teams will play.
Boy, there's a lot to unpack there, isn't there? And for more on that, let's bring Paul Feinbaum into this discussion along with D-Wood and Nika. And Paul, I want to start with you. As we listen to him there, it's another very powerful voice in the sport of college football, essentially acknowledging that right now no one knows exactly what's going to happen and everyone is to some degree out on their own. What is your sense of it?
I think it's a complete mess, Greeny, and you're right about Jack Swarbrick. He is powerful almost to the degree of a conference commissioner because he sits in on all these meetings. And it is the problem with the current structure right now. There's no czar in college football. You have these five conference commissioners, and they are working together. I know there are a lot of conflicting stories. But the problem is they don't know what they're going to do because they don't know what's going to happen above them. Ultimately, these decisions are going to be made by the college presidents in terms of whether to allow students back on campus. And this will be a debate, but I don't think there really is much debate, Greeny. If there are not students on college campuses, there will be no college football this fall.
Notre Dame may be the one place where I would ask this question because there's so much interest in it. He just said, you heard him say there, if the conferences decide to play conference-only schedules, we're confident that we will still be able to put together a good schedule. That sounds like a difficult thing for me to imagine. What would you envision Notre Dame doing? What would their season look like if they can play, but the conferences all decide to play only each other?
Well, Greeny, you start with Notre Dame having its five ACC games. They are a member of that league and everything but college football. So they'll play those five, and I would think Notre Dame would be able to attract a number of other games. They opened the season, as we all know, against Navy in Dublin. I'm highly suspicious that game will take place in Ireland. So I think Notre Dame can fill up those other spots. And I think what you're hearing, when conference commissioners indicate that we could play a conference-only schedule, what they're really saying is we don't think we'll start September 5th or Notre Dame's case a week earlier.
Okay, interesting. D. Wood, you haven't had a chance in this conversation yet this morning. As you hear these conversations about some schools and some conferences being ready before others, what do you think?
Well, Greeny, clearly you see the economics really playing out in this whole situation here. I mean, we're talking about, I heard you guys say, in the last hour, how Herm Edwards said he doesn't see a possibility if the students aren't on campus, how the players could go out there. on the flip side of that, the economics that plays into these college programs and how college football funds a lot of these programs is looming large in this situation. So we have situations where, you know, certain sections of the country are reopening and certain sections aren't. And you're going to see that's the advantage. You know, if some of these schools are able to play, they get to share revenue with the other schools within their conference. So money is looming large, very large in this situation.
You know, Dominique, I'm trying to remove any of my biases in this as we discuss it, because you and I think stand in a lot of the same places as far as the notion of amateurism. But if you were just to step back and look at it, I think that this is going to have to change people's viewpoint on it fundamentally, because no one can possibly debate now that money is driving everything. We can have pretended as much as we wanted to up until this. But I think objectively speaking, no one can pretend that this is about anything more significantly than it is about money as we watch the way this is being handled.
The irony of potentially going into a season where there won't be any students on campus, but these players may have to come to campus to play these games, that kind of qualifies them as essential employees. The irony of that, and also trying to say that they are not employees and they do not have jobs, is quite rich. So I understand where you're coming from, and I understand where Paul said he doubts that we'll play if the students aren't on campus. But I could understand schools saying that this actually makes the players safer, because they could be on isolated campuses where they only deal with themselves and they're only in this little bubble except for when they go to play other teams. So I'm not as confident as Paul is that the safety of the players will be treated the same way as the safety as other students, because frankly, those other students are not nearly as valuable as these players are as a collective.
I'm looking at the smile on your face, Paul. What's your thought?
Well, I mean, it's hard to find fault in anything Neek said, being a cynic as long as I have, but when you're a college president, you take a tremendous responsibility, and you take responsibility for letting football players on campus as well. And I may be a purist here in a very soiled pool, but I still don't believe a college president will allow that. I know it's at stake financially, but let's not get carried away. The television part of it is one thing. There won't be anybody in the stands if there aren't any students on campus.
Okay, let me then get to something, Paul, that happened on your show yesterday. I want to play a piece of sound from a guest that you had who was a member of the Minnesota Board of Regents. His name is Michael Hsu, and he was talking about the possibility of the Power Five conferences breaking away from the NCAA entirely. Here's what he said.
I wouldn't be surprised to see the Power Five, you know, move away from the NCAA. I think it could happen pretty soon, within the next couple of years. I mean, it just depends on what everybody wants. Obviously, now the system is broken, and because of the pandemic, it may never get back to normal. So we're just in a place where the NCAA is broke. And I can't wait till they start asking the members for money, which is probably going to be within the next year.
That's what he said. Now, the Board of Regents chair, Ken Powell, later said those statements do not reflect the position of the regents or the university. He said, I want to be very clear. There have been zero conversations among regents, the university, or Gopher Athletics with respect to the University of Minnesota, much less any Power Five institution changing its relationship with the NCAA. But, Paul, because of the reach of your show, it was much too late at that point. Everyone was already talking about the fact that he had said it. So what do you think? Do you think that at the end of the day, Mr. Hsu is right, and that the Power Five conferences will ultimately break away from the rest of the schools?
I think Mr. Hsu is right. And what we heard from the head of the Board of Regents was simply boilerplate. We get that every day in politics. We get it every day in sports. Greeny, until this happened, I thought we would be on a long road. What I mean by that is the pandemic. We would be on a long road to see this happening. But this is a once-in-a-lifetime event for all of us. And I think this is the moment that a lot of people are looking around saying, why do we need the NCAA? I know the basketball tournament is important. I know all these other sports are important. But the people that sit at that table, the five Power Five commissioners, plus Jack Swarbrick, plus a few other people, run college football. The NCAA does not run college football. They lost that a long time ago. And I think they're seeing the ineptitude of the NCAA, especially of the leadership that currently exists. And I think we're moving slowly. When I mean slowly, maybe a couple of years. You can't do this overnight. But I think ultimately you are going to see a break.
Yeah, there may be no one whose opinion on this I actually am more interested to hear. If they were to break away from the NCAA, once they sort of got their footing underneath them, do you think things in college football would be better or worse?
I think that would be better, because you would have the Power Five commissioners, the people that really matter, the people that contribute the large amounts of money into football, controlling it, versus a number of people who they have earned their spot at the table, but they don't have the same issues as Florida and Southern Cal and Notre Dame and LSU. So I do think because of that, they would be more lenient. They would be more amenable to player rights. Like, even though the NCAA decision came out last week, it's still being disputed. We still don't know what's going on, because with the NCAA, Greeny, I know I'm going to sound like a broken record, we never know what's going on.
Dominique, what do you think? If they were to break away and create their own, I mean, in its own way, it would be its own football league. It's not right. Different from the NFL, but different from what it is now as well. Do you think it would be better?
I think the Power Five are already different. They just happen to be forced to exist inside the NCAA. And it's, 20 or so other conferences that, or 15 other conferences that are nothing like the Power Five. So if they separate, I think we're moving more towards them being a professional football league, which is what they already are now. And that, I think, is better for everyone involved. We can stop pretending like it's something that it's not and start to treat it the way that it is, and hopefully treat the players the way that they deserve to be as the professionals that they are.
Why do you think, D-Wood, you were a star football player at Boston College, a first-round draft pick in the National Football League? What is your perspective on this?
I tend to agree with Dominique. Let's forget this whole charade, okay, to think that, you know, bringing up this word amateurism. College football is not amateurism. We're seeing it play out right now where you're talking about students not being on campus, where we're talking about playing college football games in empty stadiums. Why? Because of the money. Okay, the Power Five conferences, they're already acting like they're their own entity. They bring in so much money in this situation. So I agree with Paul. Let's let them move away from the NCAA, and I think they'll actually have the player, the student athlete's best interest at heart, not dealing with all the other crap that's going on.
Now, I happen to be on that same side as all of you in this, but I want to take the other side just so that we can present it in the conversation. Paul, there may be no one who talks to more passionate college football fans every single day than you do. So do you think you will start hearing from people who will call into your radio show and will say, if they start paying these kids, it won't be the same to me. It won't feel the same to me. If they are legitimately employees rather than students, and they could still be students, but you understand the distinction that is currently made, that people might see it differently, that people will say they won't feel the same way about college sports. What would you respond to that?
I would respond that the college fans that I deal with really don't care, Greeny. That ship passed a long time ago about caring what the major is and whether they get a degree. If you want a degree, you can get one if you go to college. But, I mean, college football fans are crazy. I had one call in Monday night who said, I don't care about this virus. I'm going to the game. I said, are you sure? What if you got sick? He said, I'm going to watch my team. In deference to LSU, I'm not going to mention what kind of fan he was.
So they're crazy, passionate fans. Neek or D-Wood, Neek, I'll start with you. Is there anything to that? The idea that it just wouldn't feel the same to people. Like sometimes when I'm watching a college game, I view it differently than I do a professional game because I think of them as kids in a way that I don't think of as pros. And I think to myself, they're not getting paid. I'm a lot less critical, things like that. Do you think people would view it differently?
I think lots of people will view it differently, but I'm sorry. Like that's it. There are some things there are kind of trade-offs in every decision you make. Right now, the trade-off to have it feel the way that people want it to feel is that many players are getting exploited. If the trade-off the other way is it feels a little different to a couple of guys, then I'm not losing any sleep over that. That doesn't bother me nearly as much as guys getting injured and then leaving college with no workers' comp, with pre-existing injuries that they have no way to have health care for. Like, that doesn't bother me as much as guys who are forced to take certain majors that they have no interest in because it has to fit into their football schedule. That doesn't bother me nearly as much as this other stuff. If a couple fans or a couple thousand fans watch the games and say, it feels a little different now that the guys are getting paid, that's a trade-off I'm willing to make to get closer to equity in college sports.
Well, I would like not to have an argument with you about this. I'm very relieved I'm on your side. D-Wood, I'll give you the final word.
Listen, Greeny, forget this whole purity test that we have with college football. Everyone knows this is a multi-billion dollar business. I'm sure fans, I'm sure fans were poor, especially in the SEC, were still going into those stadiums and just root for their team. They don't care about necessarily all the money that's involved. They just want to see their teams play. That's what we're talking about here. They want to see college football. They don't care about the money that we're talking about right now.
This could be an event that changes things as they have been in this country for over 100 years. Paul Feinbaum, thanks a million, my man, for jumping in here. Guys, stay with me. We're just getting rolling. Much more football as we go. Dak Prescott, Zeke Elliott, the Cowboys. They missed the playoffs last year. Why do our guys think they're going to make it this year? They'll tell you in just a moment. And then the Saints and Bucks are led by two future Hall of Famers. Who will emerge as the King of the South, Breeze or Brady? Let the debate begin as we continue. Get Up on ESPN.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at Geico, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the Geico Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
We are back on Get Up, and the National Football League is set to release its 2020 regular season schedule tomorrow, 8 o'clock Eastern Time. The league has evaluated contingency plans should the pandemic intensify, working in conjunction with the Players Association and medical experts on a set of protocols. And so for more on that, let's bring in our NFL insider, Dan Graziano. Dan, what more can you tell us about the NFL's contingency plans here?
Look, the NFL is looking ahead and expecting, they still say, to play a season as usual. The schedule that comes out tomorrow night will reflect that. But it'll be interesting to see how it's built, because there have been some discussions about what do you do about equity if the season has to be shortened, if the season has to be delayed. There have been talks about potentially building a schedule where the early part of the season would have interconference games and all the division games would be pushed back to later in the schedule. Remains to be seen whether they're able to pull that off. But if they do, if that's what the schedule reflects tomorrow night when it comes out, you'll know that that's why. Talking to people around this issue, they continue to say they have optimism about a full season being played, but they have to build in the possibility that it could be delayed, that it could be shortened, that there won't be fans in the stands, that stadiums would be 30 or 40% full. So the NFL is looking at all possibilities, and they'll be guided by what the other leagues do, and most importantly, the public health situation as it evolves over the next couple of months.
Outstanding. So that is something really interesting to look for when they release that schedule. See if they backfill, if you will, all the division games to later in the season. Well done, Dan. Meanwhile, let me run the hurry up here with Neek and Bobby. Dominique Foxworth, give me one team that missed the playoffs last season that are going to make it this year.
I think it's the Dallas Cowboys. Their offense was fantastic, and in football, you can normally rely, or you can better rely on offense coming back and being good than defense coming back and being good. They lost, they were 0-5 in one-score games last year. You can expect that to turn around, and Dak Prescott is fantastic. You know how much I love him and how well he played last year, and he's only going to get better with that addition of CeeDee Lamb.
Bobby, agree or disagree?
I have to agree with them. I have to go with the Dallas Cowboys. And if you're going to give Dak Prescott another elite weapon and CeeDee Lamb, I love that pick. They have three unbelievable receivers now. There should be no excuses on offense. And then on the defensive side of the ball, yeah, they lost Byron Jones. Very, very talented corner. But they also have Jalen Smith. And then hopefully Leighton Van Der Esch can both be healthy this season and play really well at linebacker and get that defense back to where it was.
Let's flip it the other way. Neek, give me a team that made it last year that's going to miss it this year.
Yeah, I think it's the Patriots. They're still in a division that's not that great, so I wouldn't be totally shocked. But again, defense doesn't always come back as strong, and their defense can't get any better than the best in the league, which it was last year. Their offense was mediocre at best, and they're going from an all-time great quarterback to one who we have so many questions about. So I think this offense is going to get worse. This defense is going to get worse because it has to, and they're probably going to miss out on the playoffs this season.
Bobby, give me a team that's going to miss it.
The Houston Texans. Deshaun Watson can carry a team to the playoffs, but he can't carry Bill O'Brien's decisions in the offseason as GM. Losing DeAndre Hopkins, their best weapon, it's going to put a lot of onus on Deshaun Watson to come and play huge. They don't have the offense that they used to have. This division is only getting better with the addition of Phillip Rivers to the Colts. It's going to be heavy sledding if they're going to try to make it out of the AFC South.
That's well done. Meanwhile, that brings us to our second two-a-day question this morning. We're doing two-a-day in the month of May, answering two big questions looking into the National Football League. And for this one, we turn to the NFL power rankings here, according to ESPN.com. The New Orleans Saints are the team that they picked fourth. They project the Saints to be the fourth best team in the NFL this year. You see them right now behind the Chiefs, the Ravens, and the 49ers. And so, Neek and Bobby, I will ask you again my Goldilocks question. With the Saints at four, Dominique, is that too high? Is it too low? Or is it just right?
Just right. I think Mama Bear was the one that was in the middle. Like, everything was just right. Yeah, they are in the Mama Bear position. I think that that offense is fantastic. Frankly, their roster going into the draft, I remember prepping for the draft, looking at their roster and thinking, they don't need anything. It's a great position to be in. And then adding Emmanuel Sanders, the one place of their offense that they needed some help was some ability to stretch the field. As long as Drew Brees can get the ball down there, Emmanuel Sanders can get open. So I love this team in that division with a lot of attention going to Tampa Bay. They'll be able to fly under the radar, which is crazy to think with the quarterback and the talent they have. We had Cam Jordan on the show earlier today. He is one of the leaders of that defense. Them also adding Malcolm Jenkins. This team is loaded from a talent standpoint, and they are mentally tough. Every year, it seems they fall out of the playoffs in some way that would debilitate another team, and they bounce back and find themselves back at the top of that division.
What do you think, Bobby?
I think it's a little bit too low. I thought they were the most complete team in the NFL last year. I can't get them ahead of the Kansas City Chiefs, but as Neek mentioned, the addition of Emmanuel Sanders giving Drew Brees that deep threat, that's going to give allow things to open up for Michael Thomas. Last season, he was the guy they could blanket on. Sure, he's having 150-plus catches, but you need somebody to stretch it. His average touchdown over the last two seasons was 25 yards. It gives Drew Brees that deep threat that they've been lacking. He really hasn't had a number two receiver in a number of years, and that can be Emmanuel Sanders.
So to be clear, Bobby, you like the Saints over Brady's Bucks in the NFC South?
I think they're the best team in the NFC.
Neek, you agree?
Wow. I mean, I think they're definitely better than Brady's Bucks, but I have some questions about them being better than the 49ers. I don't know if they should be any higher. I like where they are right now. They could beat the 49ers, but I don't know. I got a lot of love and respect for Kyle Shanahan.
All right, two a day in the month of May. Two big questions every single morning. Meanwhile, I have a big question from the NBA coming up next. There's a huge difference between Michael Jordan and the players of his era versus the stars of today. Do Stephen A. and Jalen Rose agree? They're going to tell you as they join us live next. Get Up on ESPN.
It's your home speaking, and I need you to do me a couple of favors. First, could you get that blueberry that rolled under the fridge last week? It's throwing my feng shui off. Second thing, bundle your home and car insurance with Geico. It's easy, and we could save money. Lastly, I know you were thinking of painting the nursery back to off-white, but I'm actually feeling this baby blue. Didn't think it was my color, but I am pulling it off.
Geico. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
We are back on Get Up, and in 10 minutes, don't miss it. Controversial comments about Michael Jordan and the players of his era from the other day. Stephen A. and Jalen will join us in 10 minutes with their reaction right here on Get Up. In the meantime, today, day two of the Korea Baseball Organization. We have the NC Dinos taking on the Samsung Lions, and there's a familiar face, the fans of the Mets. That's Aaron Altherr, a former Met with his first home run in the Korean League. Dinos would win that one by a final score of 4-3. The ESPN2 game from early this morning would feature the Doosan Bears taking on the LG Twins. Top of three, Doosan up 3-0. Got a runner at third. We got Juhwan Choi at the plate. We got Juhwan Choi in the seats in right field. Elbow bumps for all in the dugout. 4-3, the final of the first game. 5-2, that one you can catch all the action on ESPN2. Meanwhile, some required reading this morning from a really interesting op-ed that baseball super agent Scott Boras wrote in the New York Times. It's called "We Have to Bring Baseball Back." And part of it, he wrote, "How do we harmonize the concerns of health experts with the unwanted effects of those public health efforts? Experts believe we need isolation and social distancing, but that has led to lost jobs, increased stresses of every type, and a diminishing of the social tapestry that binds and enhances our lives. After many weeks of following safer at home protocols, people are understandably restless and looking for an outlet. It is time again for baseball to serve. That sums up the way I think so many of us feel so well. And so here is Scott Boras. And Scott, I really appreciate you getting up early and doing this. What role do you see baseball and sports in general playing in lifting the country up through this unprecedented time?
Well, baseball has a history of doing this, Mike. And I think a lot of it is that we're asking a lot of our society to isolate. We're asking them to stay at home. And I think giving them something that is a unifying dynamic, normalcy, baseball, what it's done in the past, why, you know, the politicians of our day, President Trump and Mayor Cuomo and Mayor of Chicago, you know, many, many politicians are now seeking, I think, that aspect of normalcy that we want in our American culture. And yet we have to do it in a very safe manner and do it in a way that where we know more about this virus. The medical professionals have identified this. And I think baseball players, being the age they are, being the in first-class physical condition, and also having really outstanding and prolonged medical histories with their teams, the fact that they don't have the underlying medical conditions, the risk of mortality is a lot less with this employment group, and it really allows them, I think, certainly a base and now a with a real understanding from the medical experts that we can certainly start to get players ready and get them trained and ready and back in spring training.
Well, that brings us to a really important point. And I would say that you should read the op-ed because Scott gets very deeply into the history of how baseball has played this role in the past, including President Roosevelt during World War II, asking baseball's owners to bring baseball back because he felt it was important for the country. So that's very much worth reading. But let's get to what you were just talking about. What conversations have you had with players about their desire to play and how they balance that with their concerns about safety?
Well, obviously, the players I represent, you know, we've had conversations with well over, you know, 100 major leaguers, and you know, the athletes are they're understanding. They're, you know, we have given them a lot of information from the, you know, many of the physicians that treat them, the epidemiologists, virologists. The data is much more profound and exhibited today. And I think one thing we know is that this virus has a clear impact. It's not going away. It has a dramatic impact on those of higher ages and people with underlying medical conditions. And fortunately, the athletes of baseball, those parameters carry much, much less risk with this. We've looked at the hospitalization rates of people in this age group without underlying medical conditions. We've looked at the, you know, mortality rates, both in where they could play in spring training in those states. You know, one of the epidemiologists from UC Berkeley pointed out about being locally observant and appropriate as to how you wear and how you treat this virus. And certainly those in Florida and Arizona, And frankly, in many states now, the mortality rates are much lower than they are in the Northeast. So when you look at that and you look at the risk that are related to the players, I think they're much more comfortable now with returning. Also, the treatments that are available now are more defined, all the therapeutics, and also we're very hopeful about vaccines in the future.
Yeah, the few players that I've had on here that we've talked to have also expressed to me some hesitancy regarding the quarantining itself. So if baseball is going to come back as soon as possible, it seems likely the players are going to be, for lack of a better word, kind of separated from the rest of society for a reasonable significant period of time, including possibly their families. What hesitation have you heard from your players regarding that?
Well, I think we have to set up models as we do in medicine, and that is you can certainly head to spring training. And I think players that I represent have all said they're willing to look at this for 30 days and be isolated and phase in spring training with, say, pitchers and catchers first. I think one of the things we have to consider, Mike, though, is that we need to do this We need to have a little longer spring training because the players have been isolated. This is a very unique setting that they've been in for the last 50 days, and we need a little more conditioning time. We need more time to before we get to the skill part of the game than we have in the past. So it's a very different process. But I think one thing that's clear is that we have involved the people. They're going to have doctors there. They're going to have their trainers there. The isolation aspect, I think the players are willing to do to really take every precaution as we test before they go, test when they arrive, and really create an environment that we can, after a 30-day or so period, let everyone know that this group is healthy. We also have an international community that we have to do well in advance because we have to bring them here and get a look at where they're at, and that may be additional time. We have to have isolation spaces for those who test positive, and we also have to have, I think, a period of time for those to integrate back in. So it's going to take a little bit more time, I think, than the norm to bring baseball back and get players ready. And then I think during that time, we can decide what the schedule can be, because as one thing we're learning about this, the more time we spend studying the virus and collecting the medical information, the more efficient of a schedule I think we can have. And we also have the month of October that we can use as the regular season now by the players' agreement. So I think we can put together something that can really help America.
All right, Scott, listen, I'm out of time here. I very much appreciate you doing this. Again, I recommend reading the op-ed in the Times. We have to bring baseball back. A lot of interesting thoughts in there. And let's stay in touch as we work our way closer to this. I'd like to hear your perspective. Thanks a million for doing this.
Thank you, Mike.
That's Scott Boras, again, Major League Baseball super agent. And again, we do have baseball continuing for you on ESPN2. Live from South Korea, the NC Dinos and the Samsung Lions tomorrow morning, 5:30 Eastern, ESPN2 and the ESPN app. Up next, if you've been watching Last Dance, you have seen Michael Jordan's insatiable desire to win. Was he just different than the players today? Jalen and Stephen A. answer that question next.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now, it's our turn to share with the GEICO Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
We're back on Get Up, and episodes 7 and 8 of The Last Dance will premiere on ESPN Sunday night beginning at 9, and I'm here to tell you they're the best ones yet. Our colleague Mark Jackson has been featured in the series, and he was on with Scott Van Pelt the other night, and he made some really interesting comments about the way the game has changed. I want you to hear this.
I definitely agree with it, and it's not a knock. It's just a different time. When you look at what Michael Jordan stood for, and you look at Kobe Bryant, the late, great Kobe Bryant, those guys were willing to die on the court. They were willing to do whatever it took to flat out get a victory. They competed in everything that they attempted to do. It was a different mindset, with all due respect. There is certainly greatness in the game today. But I say that the difference between that generation and those two guys in particular, they would do whatever it took to win on the basketball floor. And there's no knock to anybody today, but it's just it's cut from a different cloth.
Different cloth. Fascinating words. And I've got Jalen Rose with me here this morning, and I think we'll have Stephen A. Smith in just a moment. I'm told we're having just a little difficulty getting him on the air, but we do have Jay. Yes? Do we have Jalen? All right, excellent. So, Jalen,
yes,
when you hear, and that's your former teammate there, Mark Jackson, talking, what is your react? What do you think of him saying players of that era were cut from a different cloth?
That's very accurate. But also, in defense of today's athlete, the game is a lot different, too. I see the relationship between players and the leagues and their teams is more like business, as opposed to there was a level of loyalty that you had to your franchise and your teammates back then. And that's why, even for fans, growing up, fans rooted for teams. Now fans root for players. It's the microwave generation, Greeny. People ain't gonna be diehard like you are with the Jets and I am with the Lions. When KD leaves Oklahoma City and he goes to Golden State, fans going with him. Same thing with LeBron when he goes to Miami and he goes to L.A. But in a physical nature of just how the game is played, It's more pace and space. It's more drive and kick. It's more load management. And so those are the things that older players are going to talk about as the game continues to travel throughout the decades, how the players in the current decade that are playing have it a lot easier than they did.
All right, I'm told that we do have Stephen A. with us here again. First Take about 15 minutes away. So, Stephen A., same thought to you. Do you believe the players – I understand the game has changed, the way the game is played and all of that. But do you believe the mindset of the players today is markedly different than it was in the era when Michael Jordan played?
Markedly different, without question. And I'm going to say what Jalen Rose didn't say. A lot of today's players are just simply very, very soft mentally. Literally, there are players that I haven't spoken to in years because I said they played like garbage the night before. That's it. That's it. Or they showed up in a playoff game and disappeared. Last time I checked, you're playing in front of thousands of people in person, millions of people watching on television. You're putting your exploits on display for the human eye to witness. And then when you call it like you see it, it's like you talked about their mama or their family or loved ones or something like that. It makes no sense whatsoever. So in that regard, I think the game has definitely changed. That's not to say with everybody, but certainly with a lot of guys, they're thinking about their brand. They're thinking about how things will reverberate, how it might ultimately compromise them financially. And they take those things into consideration, not looking at the fact that by putting your skills on display, you're open to scrutiny, just like you're opened to praise. Back in the day, you talk to a lot of guys, their whole thing is that they wanted the ability to be able to confront you, to go face to face, man to man, and have a conversation with you. They might question your knowledge. They might question your know-how. They might question your sources. They might question a multitude of things. But if you were somebody that was willing to walk into an arena, particularly inside of a locker room, and you made yourself accessible to them, they might rip you a new one. But after that, you can shake hands and move on because you're willing to listen to what they have to say and vice versa. In today's day and age, you know, you don't have that because they're insulated by just a cabal of people where you have people in front of them speaking for them, speaking to the media on their behalf, taking positions for them and insulating them from that direct one-on-one contact. And Jalen could speak to this just as well as anybody, because there have been times where I am sure that Jalen has had to speak to a reporter or two about things that were said or written about him when he was playing. Well, Jalen is the kind of person that he doesn't mind talking to you man to man. Let's have this conversation. There isn't a whole bunch of people in the middle of it all that have nothing to do with it directly speaking on his behalf or those players of his generation. That is not the case today, and that's a big problem. That's why there's certain people, and they know who they are in the NBA, that I give major props to, because they'll call you themselves. God rest his soul, Kobe. You got to a point where you were scared saying something about Kobe Greeny. You know why? Because Kobe would pick up the phone. What the hell did you just say today? I saw you just say this. And he would address you directly. You don't get too much of that in today's game.
I get that. Now, Jalen, how much of that might be attributable to just how much more media there is out there today? And media now means everything. I mean, practically every human being is the media now with social media. And we see that way some players have reacted to that. There's just a lot more of it out there. Jalen, quickly, because I can see Steve is shaking his head. Real quick thought from you, Jay.
Well, you guys are old enough to remember my favorite show growing up, White Shadow. And there was a guy in the classroom named Arnold Horseshack, used to raise his hand and say, ooh, 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 when he had to answer a question. And the reason why I bring that part up is because having multimedia and social and all of these different platforms that your family and friends, your staff, your managers, your agents have access to the information that is being said about you, they become instigators in their own way. Did you see what such and such said about you? Did you see what such and such wrote about you?
True.
Did you see what such and such posted about you? So now it's almost like I gotta defend myself. And you forget that you're a professional and it becomes a part of what you do for a living and why you make the big bucks.
Yeah, quickly, Horseshack was welcome back, Cotter, but the point remains. Stephen A., go ahead.
Oh, yeah, welcome back.
I'm going to take it a step further than that. Here's the reality. You can talk about that, but the reality is this. You have players. Listen, if I'm on national TV, I go to games. I'll go inside that locker room. You have access. You got something to say, say it. And I've seen people that had something to say to me, but sent about three or four different people to say it for them. and I'm standing right there. I mean, you got some dudes that are just wusses. Let's just call what it is, Jeannie. Let's just call what it is, Greeny and Jalen. There are some dudes that's just soft as putty. They are intent. They don't want to have a conversation man to man with you to handle their business. They use others to do it for them. And I don't have any respect for that. I tell athletes all the time, you know what? I'm right here. And I got the national airwaves. I'm standing right in front of your face. If you got something to say to me, tell me when and where. I'll meet you. It doesn't matter. But your inaccessibility will not stop me from doing my job.
I get it.
That's the attitude you got to have.
But Stephen, hold
on.
And
we can't front. Money is power. And at some point when you start making enough bread, it's like such and such can't say anything to me because it's not going to affect my quality of life. And I'm not dealing with that. So there has to be there's something to be said for that as well.
Stephen A., people are different, of course. Yeah. People change and some approach things differently. But is it not fair to say that these players hear, all of them, the good ones and the bad, hear so much more about themselves than they did as recently as 20 years ago that it's reasonable to assume it's going to affect them in some way?
Well, yes, it's fair, Greeny, but you also have to consider the source. If you treat everybody with, you know, blanketly, then that's a different problem. You're around the league. If you're in the league and you've been playing a number of years, you've been around long enough to cultivate relationships, if you so choose, to cultivate relationships in a fashion where you know who to speak out when you want to have your voice. But because of social media, they feel like they have a voice. They don't need to speak to anybody. They can send those hanger-ons to speak on their behalf. They could say something themselves on social media if they want to. And sometimes they act like that's going to usurp the position of those in the media. Good luck with that. Let's see if you pull it off.
But here's the thing. Guys, Jalen, we have guys who will make burner accounts to argue with people who have like 81 followers. They're not talking about Stephen A. Smith, who's the loudest voice in all of sports. We're talking about guys who are defending themselves in arguments against just people, random people with Twitter accounts.
And you would think I'd be the person that's making the 81 references, not you. But this is the thing, Greeny. For today's player, you alluded to it and I talked about it earlier. There's so much multimedia consumption. Think about it. You're looking down at your phone. You're looking at Facebook. You're looking at Twitter. You're looking at IG. You're looking at the television. You're looking at YouTube. It's so much information that has to do with your name, your brand, and other people get a chance to now chime in and have opinions as well. At some point, you feel like I'm making this a level of money. I have this much power. I'm going to defend myself because it can affect my brand. It can affect my followers. It can affect my appearances, my endorsements. So it becomes bigger than just what's happening
as it
relates to the score of the game.
Stephen A., final
word. I got some advice, Greeny.
Yeah.
To the players themselves, do what you can to cultivate relationships with people that you would like to disseminate your message, as opposed to relying on your hanger-ons, who nobody in the media is going to trust anyway. If they don't hear from you, it doesn't matter. And in terms of the media, you know what? Be fair, be human. And outside of that, don't give a damn about what anybody has to say. If they talk, just because they don't talk to you doesn't mean they get to stop you from talking about them. Move on. Period. I do it every day, and I'm living quite well.
Right, but also, Stephen A., that's a strength, that's a discipline that comes with wisdom and also a life skill. What I would say to people is don't take everything so very personal. Like, we're really critiquing
who you are
for public consumption. It's not personal. We're just trying to be professional and cover what we see.
I have to let it go there as much as it's the last thing on earth I want to do, but Stephen A.'s show starts
Jaylen's
in six
right.
minutes. Steve, thank you, my man. You're the best. Jalen, thank you. There's a fascinating conversation. It's one that I think we can continue to have. Meanwhile, they have a lot of fascinating conversations coming your way on First Take. Coming up next, they will continue talking about Kevin Durant on First Take, both on and off the floor. Stephen A., Max, Molly, and company getting ready to roll. First Take follows us on ESPN. Back on Get Up with a bit of encouraging breaking news. The Bundesliga in Germany, that nation's largest soccer league, is expected to restart this month, with May 15th being the first day it's eligible. No fans will be allowed. Germany's ban on mass events goes through August 31st. But still, with only 9 match days left in the schedule, Bundesliga plans to finish their season on time by June 30th. So that can only be encouraging news. All right, I have 1 minute left. Dominique, I'm told you have something you want to say to Stephen A. and Jalen. Go.
I mean, I think that I should congratulate them on effectively getting everyone off of their lawn. because I just felt like they were attacking all these players in ways that I don't think are necessarily true. I think people have changed and the world has changed, but these players are fundamentally the same as they were back in the day. And it's hard for me to listen to them say that current athletes are a lot more sensitive when we're midway through a 10-part documentary, which main thread is how sensitive Michael Jordan was. Like, he was talking trash to writers in the same way that Draymond Green talks trash to Charles Barkley and talks trash to everyone else. Like, it just, to me, feels like the medium is different, but the players, they want it just as much as the players did back then. They're trying just as hard as players back then. They're just as sensitive as the players were back then. They're just doing it a little differently. So it just to me, it's frustrating to not have somebody there to represent the younger current players against those guys.
All right, we are out of time. We will leave it at that, but not for long. See you tomorrow. First Take starts now.